The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
I'm Malika Andrews, host of NBA Today, and we're hitting the road with a whole crew.
I'm the most unbiased person on this panel.
So get ready for some special guests. At what point did you know?
Yeah, night before.
All the breaking news.
There's a growing confidence that Joel Embiid will be back.
And of course, unforgettable moments. Is that my watch? No! I guess that says it all! Join us for NBA Today weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN.
Tonight we'll have game 4 in both the Eastern and Western Conference semifinals in the NHL on ESPN and the app. We got Hurricanes, Rangers from Madison Square Garden with the Canes up 2-1. That one starts at 7 Eastern. Then it's the Flames visiting Connor McDavid and the Oilers with Edmonton up 2-1 in that one, 9:30 Eastern. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, I want you to check out this kid's walk-up dance. Do I have Marcus Spears with me now? I want to know if Marcus Spears had any thoughts on this kid's walk-up dance.
Yeah, Graz, that's how you do it.
That's it?
That's how you do it when you know you're the man. I walk up to the shows like that, Graz. You've seen this before.
I have seen
Look
that.
Look at the little man.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, it's really going on a while now. Like, does he hit the ball, or is this all just...
Well,
does it matter?
Oh, yeah, he's going to smack the ball, but this is what sports is about.
This?
The celebrations, brother. It ain't got nothing to do with the – it actually has nothing to do with him hitting the baseball.
Right.
It's about his walk-up. That's all that matters. Look at his dad trying to calm him down.
Yeah.
But in his mind, he's saying, Dad.
Oh, he gets it.
He's saying, Dad, you ain't playing. He's saying, Dad, you ain't playing. I need all of this to do what I just did.
And then
let him go, man.
And he delivered.
Freely.
You're absolutely right. He hit that ball a long way.
Yeah.
So I guess he gets to dance.
All right, well, anyway, get it, little man. Get it, little man.
Marcus Spears breaking that down for you. Let's go back to the basketball for a little while. Our game of the night, Celtics hosting the Heat. Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Heat up 2-1. Marcus Smart out for the Celtics with an ankle injury. It wouldn't matter. Celtics got off to a hot start. Up 10-1 in the first quarter off the Max Strus miss. Jason Tatum gets the rebound, takes it down the floor for the layup. Celtics up 11. Just under 6 minutes remaining in the first. Celtics up 13. Strus turns it over again. White dishes to Tatum for the dunk. Great pass, great finish. The Heat missed their first 14 shots from the field. Longest such streak to begin a playoff game in the last 25 years. Celtics were up 29-11 after one. Second quarter, Celtics by 18. Tatum drives, finishes off the glass. Boy, he had it going. Take another look at the drive and finish by Tatum. That put Boston up by 20 points. Under 7 minutes remaining in the second, they're up 17 off the assist from White. Tatum fighting for that layup. He had 24 in the first half. Boston led by 24 at halftime. Third quarter now, Celtics up 65-37. White finds Tatum, who spins and hits the fadeaway off the glass. Everything coming up Celtics. 4.5 left in the third. Celtics up 29. Tatum blocks Victor Oladipo from behind. Peyton Pritchard is going to take it down the floor. Find Jaylen Brown for the layup. Tatum doing it on both ends of the court. The Celtics win 102-82. They tie the series 2 games apiece. Tatum at 31 points and 8 rebounds. And here's what he had to say.
I didn't doubt myself. You know, I know how to play basketball. And regardless how many points I scored, just trying to come out and help us get a win, you know, that was just most important.
No excuse for how I played tonight. I don't got nothing to do with my knee. I just got to be better. Will be better. I'm not too worried about it.
Miami's starting five combined for just 18 points. That is not a typo. That is the fewest ever in a playoff game since we've been tracking starter performance. Victor Oladipo outscored the entire starting five by himself off the bench. That's also the first time that's ever happened in a playoff game. Back with J.J. Redick and Kendrick Perkins here on Get Up. Perk, Heat making some history there statistically in terms of their scoring in Game 4. How does something like that happen to that Miami team in a game like this?
Well, one, it just tells you how great of a defensive team the Boston Celtics are, right?
when you look at the Celtics, they shot 39% from the field, 23% from three. Jaylen Brown was 5-for-20 from the field, and they won by 20. But look, let me talk about Bam Adebayo, okay? Listen, he complained this season about not making the All-Star team, not being a defensive player of the year, things to that nature. And you know how you go out there and you prove people wrong? By performing on the big stage when the lights are bright. And this is his opportunity to show the world why he's that type of guy. Why we should mention him in the same conversation with a Giannis or an Anthony Davis when it comes to moments like this. I want you to think about 2020 when the Miami Heat played the Boston Celtics. Bam averaged 22-11-5. He led the team in points, rebounds, and assists. This year against the Boston Celtics, 13-7-4. He's the second best player on the team. Jimmy has tried and did everything he possibly can in this series. Now it's time for Bam to elevate his game and be consistent.
JJ, what'd you make of that performance by Miami?
I was disappointed. It seemed to me like they, from the beginning of the game, they took their foot off the gas and they didn't play with a sense of urgency, that they were a little bit satisfied, I guess, by getting home court advantage back. This, in a lot of ways, was a mirror image of most of the first half of Game 3, with the Celtics using their defense, their rebounding to create offense. I thought their pace and movement was much better in this game. Despite the poor shooting numbers, just better decision making. They cut their turnovers from 24 to 9. And look, Tatum, to me, had another classic bounce-back game. This is a really interesting stat. Since mid-January, he's played in 48 games. He hasn't played in consecutive losses. And in any time they've lost a game, he's averaged 32 and shot 51% from the field after a loss. He's got to be able to be a little more consistent to close this series out, but I expect the Celtics to win.
You expect Tatum to continue playing like that?
I do. Why not? Look, he is a great player. He's probably at this point a top 8 or 10 player in the NBA. And a player like that, yeah, you expect them to have big nights back to back.
What do you think, Perk? Is Tatum going to be consistent from here on out, or is it going to continue to be this roller coaster?
I think he's going to be consistent, and I think he knows it. I'm with JJ. Like, I don't want to see any more bounce back games. I want to see follow up games. You know, he's that great of a talent. And when you talk about, for us, the guys who are elite scorers in this league, Jason Tatum is up there with the best of them. And so there's no reason that he can't put a string of games together consistently, offensively, throughout these playoffs.
We know that he can. We also know that the Celtics, you know, have other guys that can pick him up when he doesn't. But, JJ, if he is inconsistent, if he doesn't get the consistency issues ironed out, start putting together consecutive good games and wins, can the Celtics be a championship team this year?
I do think they can, simply for the fact that their defense is that good, as Perk alluded to, especially when they have Robert Williams healthy. We really saw his value last night, both as a defender, a rebounder, and also as a vertical lob threat, which really, if you look across the board at all the playoff teams, he's really the only guy left that is that vertical lob threat. And that's going to help them. They're a deep team. There's a bunch of guys that can score. We obviously saw Jaylen Brown score in game three. Marcus Smart had a big game too. Al Horford has had some big moments. He was phenomenal last night as well. Probably had the best five-point game I've ever seen in my life with his defense and rebounding.
Perk, you like
that?
Yeah.
Dan, JJ, can we take a moment to really appreciate Robert Williams for a second? Because we have to realize, I didn't watch a whole lot of guys over the last 3 years that didn't had torn meniscus be out for the entire season. This guy right now is putting his body on the line, embracing the opportunity, knowing what's at stake, and still out there giving his team everything that he has and more. And I just want to appreciate him at this moment and give him his flowers for going out there and competing and giving everything that he has and just, you know, being available.
Absolutely. Game 5 of Miami and Boston, big game. Tomorrow night we'll see what the next turn in that very interesting series will be. But I want to go back to the NFL now and run the hurry up with some big stories around the league with our Diana Russini. Diana, what do you got for us out of Cleveland?
Dan, let's start with Baker Mayfield. It's the end of May, and he is still technically a Cleveland Brown. He's on the roster, despite the fact that we all saw on social media Deshaun Watson and the rest of the offense in the Bahamas working out. So Baker's not at practice right now, but what's going to be interesting and really the dates to keep an eye on are in mid-June, because essentially if Baker doesn't show up to those camps, he would be fine. So we'll see if they'll be able to work something out there and what Baker will do, because we know that could be a little awkward if he shows up there knowing that Deshaun Watson is now the starting quarterback. Meantime, we all know by now that Deebo Samuel wants a contract extension. We know that the San Francisco 49ers have turned down any trade offers. They seem to not be as open to it as they were initially. So as of right now, from what I can tell from some of the conversations I had over the last few weeks, they're fine with Deebo not being there. Even if they had a deal with him, they still would be fine. They know what they're getting out of their running back wide receiver, but he is not showing up for OTAs right now. And really, the interesting one here is Arizona Cardinals starting quarterback Kyler Murray. He's also another player we know wants a contract extension. He has not received that just yet. Well, he's also made the decision not to show up to Arizona's OTAs. Head coach Cliff Kingsbury said yesterday to the media, yeah, I would love to have everybody here, but these are voluntary. So we obviously can discuss whether or not that's a good move for Kyler to not be there, but he has made that decision for right now that he is not going to step foot on the grass until he gets a deal.
Well, that's a good idea, Diana. I think we should discuss that. We have Marcus Spears with us, who, in addition to being the world's greatest T-ball analyst, also knows a thing or two about the NFL. Swagoo, is it a big deal or not that Kyler Murray's not there?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe it is a big deal, Grimes and Diana. And it's not because we all understand that Kyler Murray wants a new contract, and this is usually a part of what guys do in order to secure that. And it's a part of a negotiating tactic. I'm just talking strictly from a football sense. Kyler Murray's last outing against the Los Angeles Rams in the playoffs, between him and Cliff Kingsbury, it was abysmal. It was something that it looked like they were, one, unprepared, and Kyler Murray wasn't ready for the moment. And then you focus on what happened this particular offseason. Cliff Kingsbury gets an extension. Kyler Murray obviously is in that waiting game right now to try to figure out what the Arizona Cardinals are going to do. But the fly in the ointment is you don't have DeAndre Hopkins the first six games of the season. So there will not be a safety valve for Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is bad when DeAndre Hopkins is not on the field. His numbers speak to that. How his production speaks to that. So the rapport that you begin to build early in this season without having your number one guy is very important. And I get it, voluntary, and we're going to say it a million times about OTAs. But let's not get in this microscope and think that OTAs for each individual club is the same, right? There is different connotation, different context to each particular situation in the NFL. This is not overall arching. So I think it's a bit irresponsible for Kyler Murray not to be there. I understand why he's not there. That's why I'm not going to go crazy and have a visceral reaction. But ultimately, Kyler Murray has been questioned about his leadership. It's been questioned about his attitude. And this would have went a long way into him showing up saying, look, we don't have our guy, the guy that we're going to lean on heavily at wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. Let me step in early and make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, look, you're right. I mean, look, it's voluntary. He has a choice and a right not to be there if he doesn't want to. That's not what we're discussing. What we're discussing here is the potential benefit, right? They have these practices for a reason. So, Diana, do you think if Kyler were to go that would be a good thing for him or a bad one?
Dan, I'm so glad that Marcus took the angle of the football side of this, essentially just stating the obvious here, which is Kyler needs the reps. He had his worst season in the pocket last year over the last 3 years, right? We haven't seen any substantial development and growth. We haven't. He needs to be out there with his offense. But let's put that to the side. The other part of this, Dan, you know this, anytime we've seen a player that wants to get a deal, a nice way, or at least a good tact, is often putting pressure on the front office by showing up, being the guy, being the leader, doing all the things that are asked of him. So it's almost just an automatic pressure from the team, from the players, kind of like, hey, sign our guy. We want to play with him. What are we waiting for? And I think by Kyler not doing that, that works to his disadvantage because he's not there. They're not seeing him. His teammates aren't able to rally around him. And I think it would just be good for his overall image within the organization to show up.
Kyler's goal eventually to get that long-term deal. They have time, but we'll see where things stand as we head into minicamp next month. We come back on Get Up. Who is running the offense in New England? Bill Belichick got some questions about that yesterday, and he answered them about the way you might expect. Plus, Georgia got the trophy last year. What if we could soon be living in a world where there was more than one college football national champion? It may be more realistic than you think, and we will tell you why.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Back on Get Up, and meanwhile on planet Earth, this is a Cubs-Reds game, and foul ball into the stands. It's going to land in this guy's beer. And we all know what that means. Right, guys? Right, Kendrick Perkins and Marcus Spears? It means he has to chug it.
Ain't no wrong with it.
That's one of the age-old baseball rules.
What you mean nasty? Hey, look, that ball that's in that cup was...
The ball that was in the cup was in the pitcher hand.
But Swaggoo, don't act like you wasn't eating dirt growing up. We all did, especially in the South. So you did way worse.
There's dirt on that ball.
I ain't with you on that one, bro.
It's all kinds of stuff on that ball. I did not grow up in the South.
We in the middle of pandemics and COVID, man. I ain't drink no.
Fair point.
No.
Whether you grew up in the South or not, you don't want the COVID, even if you're even eating the dirt. Anyway, the OTAs got underway.
Grass.
I want to talk about some football. Can we talk about some football, please? This is weird. All right, anyway. OTAs got underway in New England on Monday. And get this. Bill Belichick spent almost the entire day working with the Patriots offense. Belichick was also asked just who will be the Patriots offensive play caller this season. And he held forth with a very detailed answer. I'm kidding. Listen.
So what plays are we calling? Mini camp plays?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to coach the team, coach the players. We're going to get them ready to go. We're going to game plan. We have to game plan. We'll play call. Do all the things that we need to do and compete in games. Right now, we're months away from that. When we get to it, we'll get to it.
Look who I found wandering the halls of Bristol, Connecticut today. This is Mike Reese, our Patriots reporter, who was at Patriots OTAs yesterday. So thanks for coming in, Mike. This is awesome. We have somebody who was on scene. What did you take away from yesterday?
So it was interesting, Dan. Usually you go to practice and you watch the players. This was one where I was watching the coaches as much as the players. And what I would say was how much time Bill Belichick spent with the offense and how different that is from what it usually has been with the Patriots. Usually you have two practice fields. Josh McDaniels would be running the offense for the better part of the last decade. Bill Belichick would usually be over with the defense. Mm-hmm. Hey, he's got a defensive heart, right? But here he was all offense. And I watched him at one point look down at a card, relay something to quarterback Mac Jones. Mac Jones then relayed it to his teammates. To me, that was an indication of how involved Bill is in what they're doing offensively.
Well, you've been around that team a long time. You know it as well as anyone. You're watching this plan take shape with Josh McDaniels having left to coach the Raiders. And they're going to patch it together with an offensive coaching staff. Doesn't have a lot of offensive coaching experience. Do you think it can work?
It's a good question. I think it's unconventional. And I'd tell you the players are curious to see how it will unfold. I think Belichick is sort of the wild card. You almost forget when you talk about Joe Judge as a quarterback's coach, Matt Patricia as an offensive line coach. Just don't forget, Bill Belichick's also going to have a big hand in this as well.
Well, no question about it, and he's obviously running the show there as he always is. Swagu, when you look at this situation in New England, what do you think about how it's going to work?
Look, I'm uncomfortable with it, but obviously we give credence to the fact that this is Bill Belichick. But ultimately, the two names that are being mentioned has not had success in their roles as head coaches. Listen, and I know they haven't been position specific. I'm speaking about Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. But at some point, you got to look at how their offenses did. And if they had an offensive mind, why didn't they influence on those teams getting better? That's the conundrum that I'm dealing with when you name these guys and you do it by committee. Bill Belichick knows as much football as anybody that's ever walked this earth. But I'm not sure if Bill – it's a difference in knowing how to tell players to execute and you actually being in the game and having to execute and put them in positions to be successful. I don't know if he can do that. I'm just not comfortable with it because I've never seen him do it. I played for one of his guys, Nick Saban. Nick Saban ain't never called no offensive play. He's considered the greatest college coach to ever coach in college football. I'm just concerned about it more than anything. And this is what puts extra onus on it for me as well. And Mike can speak to this, and I can't wait to hear Mike T talk about it. Mac Jones in his second year in the NFL. We've had conversation after conversation since I've been at ESPN and covering the NFL about how guys struggle when they change in offensive coordinators year in and year out. I don't know if this is sustainable either. That's another issue that I have with the situation in New England. But it's Bill Belichick. Everybody's going to be calm. I'm not comfortable with it, though.
No, that's a good point, though. I mean, look, you got Belichick, you got two former head coaches. Somebody can figure out how to call a play. But, Mike T, what do you think about that, the impact it could potentially have on Mac Jones at a critical time in his development?
Yeah, I understand what Swagu says, but there's unwavering belief that Coach Belichick has in Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. And candidly, maybe he sees some of himself in those guys. Coach Belichick was fired in Cleveland. New England's his second time being a head coach. And maybe he sees similar trajectories for both Judge and Patricia in that they'll do better the next time around. And I agree with Mac Jones's trajectory is absolutely the most important thing. I thought he played well in the playoff game. I thought things were going well. And I'm sure Coach Belichick believes that he has the right plan to make sure that keeps going under Coach Judge and Coach Patricia.
I have to believe, as is often the case with a young first-round quarterback, that everything the Patriots want to do is sort of Mac Jones-centric right now on offense. So what are you seeing that shows you that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And I would just want to – I think Marcus made a great point. When you change coordinators, sometimes that can affect the second-year quarterback. One part about this change – they're actually running the same system. Mm. I think that's really important. And sometimes you bring in a different coordinator, it's a whole new system. That's sort of a core of Bill Belichick's philosophy, to your point, of building it around Mac.
So some continuity around Mac, yeah, even if it's not necessarily the coaching staff itself. Thanks, Mike, for coming in. I appreciate having some company. I was getting lonely in here. We come back and talk some more NBA, and the Broomsticks are going to be out tonight in Dallas. We're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors, and Big Perk is going to tell you what another title would mean for Steph Curry's legacy. And with the Warriors on the brink of another NBA Finals appearance, should Kevin Durant have any regrets about leaving that team for Brooklyn? We'll discuss that. But first, we got sneaky Hembo time, and this one is for Swagu. Who played the most seasons in NBA? A little NBA trivia for Marcus Spears. Who played the most seasons in NBA history? See if Marcus can get that when we come back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up with Sneaky Hembo for Marcus Spears. Hembo, keeping it pretty basic for you here, Swagoo. Who played the most seasons in NBA history?
I have absolutely zero idea.
Well, that is not an acceptable answer.
NBA seasons. I would imagine that it was possibly, I don't know, man, Kareem?
That would have been my guess, too, but it's not correct.
I should have known that.
Yeah, it's our buddy Vince Carter. 22 seasons. That's ahead of a group of guys that played 21. That includes Dirk Nowitzki, Kevin Garnett, Kevin Willis, and Robert Parrish. But the answer to this question was Vince Carter. But if it makes you feel any better, I would have guessed Kareem as well, and we would have both been wrong together. Maybe we should stick to T-ball.
I was trying to think of somebody out of high school, Grimes, but I missed it. Go ahead.
We got basketball. Celtics hosting the Heat last night in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Celtics would get off to a hot start. Up 10-1 in the first quarter. Max Strus with the miss. Jason Tatum gets the rebound. He's going all the way down the floor and laying it up and in to put Boston up by 11. Just under 6 minutes remaining in the first quarter. Same score. Strus turning it over again. Derek White dishing it to Tatum here on the other end for the dunk. Great pass, great finish. Everything was great for Boston last night. The Heat missed their first 14 field goals. Longest such streak to begin a playoff game in the last 25 years. Celtics were up 29-11 after the first quarter, and it kept going. Second quarter, they're up by 18. Tatum drives, finishes off the glass. Take another look. He had 24 points in the first half, and the Celtics led by 24 at halftime. 4.5 minutes left in the third. Now Celtics up by 29. Tatum blocking Victor Oladipo from behind. Peyton Pritchard takes it down the floor, finds Jaylen Brown for the layup. You see Tatum here doing it on both ends of the floor. Celtics won the game 102-82. Tatum had 31 points. Here's what Heat coach Eric Spoelstra had to say.
Whatever they've done to us, we can do to them. You know, and none of us are happy about what happened tonight. You know, this is part of the playoffs. There are these extreme highs and lows, particularly when you have two teams that are pretty closely evenly matched.
Can Miami bounce back tomorrow night? Well, we'll show you. We'll have Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Heat at 8:30 Eastern on ESPN and the app. The Countdown crew will get things started at 7:30 Eastern. In the Western Conference Finals, the Warriors are looking to complete a sweep of the Dallas Mavericks tonight. It would be Golden State's first sweep since the 2019 Western Conference Finals against the Trailblazers, and the Warriors would return to the NBA Finals for the first time in 3 years, but the sixth time in 8 seasons. And according to Caesars Sportsbook, Golden State is the odds-on favorite to win the championship. You see it here, far and away ahead of the rest of the teams. Did you know that since Steve Kerr took over as the Warriors head coach, they have not lost a playoff series that wasn't the NBA Finals? Incredible run for that crew in Golden State. Back with J.J. Redick and Kendrick Perkins and Marcus Spears, who sticks around now to talk about his third different sport of the show, Mr. Versatility. Perk, hey, listen, we talked a little bit in the last hour. I want to get back to this. If the Warriors do pull this off, they win one more against Dallas, which we expect, and then if they win the finals, what does that tell us about Steph Curry and his place in history?
Well, first of all, Dan, before I drop these facts, I need everybody to fix their faces and body language, okay? But when you talk about Steph Curry and you talk about a generational talent, a guy that is at 6'2", 6'3", that has changed the game, pure dominance, the greatest shooter of all time, a guy that is in the conversation with Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, for the only guys to win multiple MVPs, multiple scoring titles, and multiple championships. And then by that, look at the championships that Steph Curry won. He went through a guy that is sitting at the table for us with the GOAT conversation in LeBron James, okay? And then he's breaking up happy homes, you know? He broke up Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant a couple years back in the Western Conference Finals so bad when KD says, you know what? I decided to go live in that household. So when I look at Steph Curry, forget top 10 greatest player of all time. Forget being the best point guard to ever play the game of basketball. I'm looking at Steph Curry, and we're going to have to add some color to the Mount Rushmore, because we're going to have to start drawing and putting his eyes in those green eyes. And right now, if he goes on to win a championship and adds a finals MVP to his resume, he's going to bump Magic Johnson out and going to be sitting right there with the greats on Mount Rushmore. Y'all can take it how y'all want it. Y'all can roll your eyes. Y'all can do whatever y'all want to do. I said what I said.
I mean, I feel like that's a pretty big statement that another championship bumps him off of bumps Magic Johnson off of Mount Rushmore for Steph Curry. JJ, finals, what do you think?
Another championship and finals MVP.
Okay, and finals MVP. JJ, is he right?
Look, Steph Curry is already a top 10 player in my book. And if he wins another MVP and a finals MVP, you can certainly make a case that he's probably top five or six. It would take more than that, I think, to knock Kareem or Magic off of Mount Rushmore. When we talk about the best players, those guys, you have to get into MVPs, finals MVPs, and championships. Magic has three MVPs, three finals MVPs, five championships. Kareem has six MVPs, two finals MVPs, and six championships. And Perk, if you want to talk about changing the game, you know who changed the game? Magic and Larry. Let's keep in mind, in the 1980s, as late as the 1980s, the NBA Finals were on tape delay. As late as 1986, the Western Conference Finals were on tape delay. The league did not have the interest or clout until Magic, Larry, Dr. J, and MJ came along. Let's acknowledge that when we talk about changing the game. And you brought up in the last hour, and I apologize because I didn't know you were going to say something so crazy, that he should be on Mount Rushmore just because he's small. And when we talk about counting stats, you want to throw an MVP in there? I'll throw AI. Nope. Like AI AI is a 25-5 and guy too. Nope. If that's what we want to do. But, we want to talk about counting stats and an MVP. Yeah, I'll throw AI in there.
But JJC, again, you're missing the whole point. And I understand your brain is not functioning right now. But the reason
I have
TMJ, that I'm throwing,
I have lockjaw right now. It's really bothering me.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. And you got a nice little hat, your little soul glow in your hat. I get all that.
My hair looks good today. I'm not gonna lie.
Here's the thing that you have to realize: the reason that I bought in Steph Curry's size, because I talk about his dominance, him dominating at that size, whether it's shooting, and we don't give him enough credit the way that he imposes his will in the paint and his finishing around the basket is right
we
there.
We give him credit for
Kyrie
that all the time.
Irving.
He's one of the best finishers at that size ever. Right. What are you talking about? We don't give him credit for that?
No. Listen, everybody don't. We just talk.
Well, what
we
is that?
Perk, JJ.
Dominance
JJ,
at any size is dominance. You're not going to discredit a player for being bigger. Steph getting more credit for being smaller.
Excuse me. I want to bring this back to the question at hand. Swagger, let's talk Mount Rushmore in the NBA and Steph Curry. What do you think?
Giving me TMJ.
Yeah, I don't think Steph is on the Mount Rushmore. But I want to ask Perk and JJ, where is Kobe in this conversation?
Anybody?
I believe I got Kobe top 10. He's a top 7-8 player in the NBA. I do.
Let's look at in my book, in no particular order, by the way. After we talk about those four guys, MJ, Magic, Kareem, LeBron. I've got Duncan, Steph, Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe, Shaq. Like, that's the next group of guys. Okay. But, you can order them however you want to order them. And I think that's 11 guys, but whatever.
Marcus, is Kobe on your Mount Rushmore? Is that what you were trying to say?
No, Kobe.
He's on mine. I don't care who's on JJ's and Perks. He's on mine. I look at Jordan, Bron, Kareem, and Kobe. For me, Perk, I get it. And I understand what you're saying about Steph. And all of these guys, you can make a legitimate argument, and we could fight until get up 2027 about who should be on the Mount Rushmore in the NBA. We could do it. We could all do it. We could do it now. We could do it tomorrow. We've been doing it for years. Ultimately, for me, it's how you watch basketball. It's how you impact. I agree with both of y'all. I think Steph Curry changed the game. 100% with his shooting ability.
I hope that Steph Curry wins another couple championships, and I hope that he wins two finals MVPs, and we can have a serious discussion about this. I really do.
Final word, Kendrick Perkins.
But I've seen – oh, go ahead.
But see, here's my thing, right? Efficiency plays a part, right? And you look at the shot attempts that – you look at the shots that Steph take, he's one of the most efficient shooters and scorers of all time at that position. And I hate bringing up the late, great Kobe Bryant, but we do have to realize when it comes to missed field goal attempts, Kobe Bryant has the most missed field goal attempts in NBA history.
Yep.
That's no knock on Kobe Bryant. But again, I'm just talking about it all comes down to what is your preference. And then I want to circle back to JJ for a second. JJ was just talking about you was just talking about Bob Cousy and how he was playing against plumbers and firefighters. Those plumbers and firefighters was Bill Russell, who you just named and talked about who's in your top five greatest of all time. So is
Bob
he a
Cousy,
plumber?
Bob Cousy, hold on. Bob Cousy, Cousy played with Bill Russell, and Bob Cousy didn't win anything.
I understand.
Didn't win a playoff
but
series
saying,
until Bill Russell's
saying,
rookie
but
year.
But what I'm saying was
so
he was
his teammate.
He was playing with him. He was playing with
him. You should acknowledge he won 11 championships.
Like,
he's the greatest winner in our sport. Let's celebrate that. Let's acknowledge that.
Do we acknowledge that we watching a series now where the Dallas Mavericks are hunting a matchup to get Steph Curry to guard somebody? Or that don't matter in the Mount Rushmore?
Well,
I've seen this throughout his playoff career where people hunt for him to guard.
It's a valid point, Marcus. I will say that I was having this discussion with Pat Bev last week. Steph Curry is a good defender. I'm not saying he's a great lockdown defender. There's limitations because of his size, Perk. But he is a good defender and has been for a number of years.
Gentlemen.
Yes, he still gets hunted. Yeah.
Gentlemen, one thing we know for sure is that Marcus Spears is right about this. We could debate this for years and not reach a firm conclusion.
Well, give us more time.
We don't have it. I wish we did. We don't have it. We got to go to break. And when we come back, Georgia got the trophy last year. Could we soon be living in a world where there's more than one college football national champion? We're going to explain that to you when we come back.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back to Get Up. Talk a little college football. With the SEC poised to expand to 16 teams when Oklahoma and Texas join in 2025, the way in which the league plots its future is becoming a hot topic. One idea to be discussed is the notion of the SEC creating, running, and profiting from its own intra-conference postseason. This was discussed. Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland had this to say. We have an incredibly strong league, one that will be even stronger once Oklahoma and Texas join. The focus should be on how we as a league use that strength to further position the SEC as we face new realities. Commissioner Sankey has encouraged our athletic directors to think creatively, and an SEC-only playoff is a different idea that we should absolutely consider an option. Our Pete Thamel wrote about this yesterday on ESPN.com. It's a worthwhile read. Heather Dinich is here now. Look, we were sitting in the meeting talking about this. I said, we need to bring somebody on who can help make it make sense. And they said, well, Heather Dinich would do that. And now magically here she is. So, Heather, thanks for joining us.
As she always does.
What do college football fans need to know about this situation?
Well, they are going to talk about it next week in Destin, Florida at the SEC spring meetings, along with how to operate with 14 teams and divisions or no divisions, how they want to handle that. But the main point here is that I find it very hard to believe that Greg Sankey would go for this when push comes to shove. This seems like posturing to me, because Greg Sankey was mad when the college football playoff did not expand. Remember, there was an 8-3 vote with the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big Ten voting against expansion at this time for different reasons. Greg Sankey is still mad about this. And to me, this is a not so subtle message saying, hey, we are not going to be as accommodating this time around when we talk about expansion again.
So, all right, you don't think he'd go through with it, but you admit that he's mad, and he's mentioning this as a result of that. But if they continue to drag their feet on the playoff expansion, and hypothetically the SEC did decide to go through with this, I look down the road and I think, does this mean we go back to the days where multiple teams could claim championships in the same year?
So that's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, think about this. Everyone who's listening and watching to this right now, a national championship that has a USC, an Ohio State, you name your blue blood program, and then the SEC champion, two national champions, right? Is that good for college football? I really don't think Greg Sankey truly believes that at heart. But here's what you have to remember. The college football playoff needs a format for the 2026 season. This current deal goes through 2025, right? So the next time around, it doesn't have to be unanimous. Whoever wants to participate in whatever format they come up with can participate. There's 10 FBS commissioners. Sankey's only one of 10, plus Jack Swarbrick, who are going to decide that format. If the other commissioners come up with the format that Sankey and the SEC don't agree with, that's your slim window where the SEC isn't participating and maybe they have their own tournament, right? But in case anybody forgot, we had an SEC national championship. It was last year. Alabama and Georgia played.
Right. We know what it would look like. Exactly. Marcus, when you hear this, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's smart, number one, for the game. I think you play a playoff throughout the season in the SEC, being a player that played there, and to add a tournament after the regular season, Heather, correct me if I'm wrong. So they'll play a regular season and then create a tournament format to determine who the champion is?
Well, and plus, yes, and then you would have to get rid of your conference championship. Does the SEC want to get rid of that valuable commodity?
Yeah, and then, too, listen, y'all, all right, first of all, Heather, you cover it better than anybody in the world. The playoff is going to expand, all right? It's going to. It's inevitable. We've been talking about playoff expansion because I was at the SEC Network when the CFP started. We were talking about it 2 months after they announced the college football playoff was going to be four teams. That's when the conversation started. Do we go six? Do we go eight? Do we go 12? Listen, the bottom line is this. The SEC having their own tournament is stupid. That's dumb. They already have their own tournament. They have it from September all the way to the end of December. That's the SEC tournament. Just like all of the other, the alliance will play each other and they'll figure out how to go. I understand the power and the cachet of the SEC. It is the best conference in college football. And what they say determines a lot about how the rest of the country will operate from a football standpoint, i.e., that's why you form the quote-unquote alliance. But the alliance, with those schools being involved, understand the power and the cachet of the SEC as well. The bottom line is this, though. The college football playoff will expand. I think Cincinnati getting in the playoff this year was a preempt to them wanting to expand the college football playoff. And that's where we'll be in a number of years. It's too much money involved. It's too many teams, it's too many programs that benefit from playing each other from cross conferences to dismantle it and say we're going to crown an SEC champion after we crown an SEC champion.
Sam Acho, the SEC kind of going off on its own like this, if that were to happen in any way, really, would this be a fundamentally good or bad thing for college football in your mind?
It will be all bad for college football. One thing we love about college football is the idea of the underdog, the team that wasn't expected to win on any given Saturday coming and defeating another team, right? Look at Cincinnati, group of five team in the college football playoff. Look at Michigan, huge down year the year before in 2020. Now all of a sudden in the college football playoff, you see superstars, guys like Kenny Pickett rising and getting drafted. You see guys like Malik Willis getting national stages. games against Auburn. That's what I love about college football. If you develop an SEC-only format, an SEC-only playoff, that's not good for college football, right? If anything, Alabama should have their own playoff, their own tournament. They, out of those 14-5, that record we saw earlier, win-loss record in the college football playoff, Alabama has 9 of those wins in the college football playoff. And yes, LSU has a championship. We have to talk about that as well. And Georgia has one just from this last year. But college football is great because all these different teams from all these different conferences can play each other at different times, not just one conference and one team or the same matchups over and over and over and over again.
Heather, we brought you in here to make sense of all this. Please put a bow on it for us. What do we need to know as we exit this discussion today?
The reason we're talking about this is because there is chaos in college athletics. There is a search for a new NCAA president. The NCAA is restructuring itself. And the bottom line is there's a vacuum of leadership. So here is what you get. You get, let's throw these ideas out here and see what happens. And this is another example of it. So until the NCAA and college athletics figures itself out, everyone is thinking about what options are out there, right? And this is what you get. This is part of that chaos.
A murky future for college football. We'll obviously keep an eye on that. Tonight, though, we're going to have hockey for you. We have Game 4 of the Eastern and Western Conference semifinals on ESPN and the app. Hurricanes Rangers from Madison Square Garden with the Canes up 2-1. That starts at 7 Eastern. Then the battle for Alberta rolls on between the Flames and the Oilers with the Oilers up 2-1. When we are done here, First Take is coming up next. What message did the Celtics send to the Heat last night? And are the Patriots in danger of falling to the bottom of the AFC? First Take with Molly, Stephen A., Perk, and JJ when we're done here.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Get Up is brought to you by Obi-Wan Kenobi. 2-episode premiere streaming this Friday only on Disney Plus. Sunday morning, we will have the most famous race on the Formula One circuit, all the glitz and glam of the Monaco Grand Prix. Our coverage begins at 7:30 Eastern with Grand Prix Sunday. And the race starts at 9 a.m. Eastern right here on ESPN and the ESPN app. I'd like to finish the show today with one of our favorite aspects of it from earlier. This is a young man playing t-ball, and he's got his walk-up dance. And I mean, I know Marcus Spears' opinion on this. Like, he thinks this is what t-ball is all about. I want to know, like, is it ad-libbed? Like,
the way you get ready to play.
He practice this in front of a mirror? Like, I need answers. Yeah, it looks like he did. Well, maybe not.
He put the bat down, though.
Well, you know,
look at it. That is dad. Well, it's not baseball. It's not t-ball anymore.
It's a baby
dance warm-up. Party.
It's a baby warm-up. It's how he's getting ready to play.
Did he ever swing, though? Like, did he just, like,
he does.
That's just his moment.
Almost put it over the fence.
No, yeah, he smokes it. That's what makes it so good. Like, he knows. He knows he's going up there to do damage. He had violence in his heart when he woke up this morning, and he knew.
I have a 13-year-old son who played t-ball.
Spiker, we got to go. First Take's next. Thanks.